Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Hello and welcome to the Rachman Review. I'm Gideon Rachman, Chief Foreign Affairs Commentator, a role that often takes me abroad for conversations with some of the people, diplomats, policymakers, writers, who are shaping the global debate. As a columnist, most of my discussions are off the record, then used as background for my articles. With this show, however, I'll be getting more of my contacts to go on the record so that listeners and subscribers can join the conversation. For the last month, world economics and politics have been upended by the coronavirus epidemic. The world's political leaders have largely been caught by surprise by the disease. But one expert who's long warned of the danger from pandemics is Ian Golden, who's Professor of Globalization and Development at Oxford University and author of a book called The Butterfly Defect, which focuses on the way in which the hyperconnectivity fostered by globalization can bring dangers as well as opportunities. I recently visited Oxford, and I dropped in on Ian Golden at his base at the Oxford Martin School. I started by asking him what had originally prompted him to warn that pandemics were being underestimated as a global risk.
I've thought for some time that pandemics are an underestimated risk because they always have been the biggest killers of humanity. We saw with the 1918 so-called Spanish flu, a third of the world was infected and over 50 million people were killed, and that was with a much smaller population of the world and much less connectivity. What I've described as the butterfly defect of globalization means that the super spreaders of the goods of globalization are the bads. We have rapid population growth, not least in places where hygiene is poor, where people are in close proximity with animals, often eat wild animals, have them in markets, bring them home. And we know that those are the vectors for creating new zoonosis, new pandemics, and that these places are increasingly located near major airport hubs, between business travel, tourism travel, and other travel, people are going everywhere. And any of these pandemics can be anywhere in the world within 36 hours. We know they have an incubation period, which is like in the case of coronavirus, but in many others, often weeks. And that risk is escalating with increasing concentration of people, with animals, with airports, with the hyperconnectivity of transport hubs. So it's been an absolutely anticipated thing. And the great mystery is why we've paid so little attention to it. I think the reasons are twofold. One is that we've managed to avoid a disaster of the kind of the 1918 pandemic through a combination of good luck and some interventions.
We came quite close with Ebola, didn't we?
We came close with Ebola, we came close with SARS, we came close with avian flu. But all of, with SARS certainly at that time, which is 2003-4, China was only 4% of the global economy, now it's 20%. We didn't have the integrated supply chains or economic types of connections that we have now. With Ebola, we came close, but we were very, very fortunate that it wasn't a super spreader in the way that coronavirus
is. Well, it was quite hard to catch.
It was hard to catch. So I think it's been inevitable. And the question in my mind is, why do we spend 100 times to, in some countries, 500 times the amount of resources on military, for example, than we do on focusing on pandemics, both at the national and the global level, compare the NATO budget to the WHO budget. And I think it's really a failure of understanding how globalization and these risks have evolved that's behind this. And we need, hopefully, through this, to have a big wake-up call.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what we should do for the future in a second. But in the here and now, again, when you were warning about this a couple of years ago, you said once it's in a big hub airport, it's kind of over because it'll be all over the world. So essentially, we're at that stage now. I mean, it is a global pandemic, yeah? And it'll be with us for some time, yeah?
Yes. It absolutely is the case that this is a global pandemic. And I think we're just beginning to appreciate what that means in terms of the devastation it's going to have on economies, how it's going to sidetrack us from all the other things we need to be focusing on, including climate change and many others, and that we're ill-prepared. And one of the ways we're ill-prepared is that we're so dependent on our supply chains that one of the sad ironies of this is that a lot of our pharmaceutical supplies and medical supplies, like face masks and things, come from China. And we have whittled down our health services through austerity and privatization and controlling staffing through migration and other things. So we are very ill-prepared to take on something of this proportion. And I think it's going to be a real challenge for all of us.
Yeah. And so in a way, maybe it's premature to start looking to prepare for the next pandemic, but people will start drawing lessons. If you could get world leaders together and they do listen to people out of the top universities, what would you tell them to be doing?
You know, the obvious thing is to focus on what the current problem, and there's not a huge amount that can be done other than trying to build up resources as quickly as possible to take care of those that are going to be in desperate need and killed by it. But thinking of how to stop the next pandemic, pandemics are extremely unusual in terms of global threats in that they can arise literally anywhere in the world. And indeed, the poorer the country, the bigger the slum next to a major airport, the higher the risk. And that means that unlike most other global threats where a small subset of actors can address most of the solutions. In the case of the pandemics, you need that global capability of monitoring, surveillance, and reaction at source. That means that although not every country clearly can have the capacity to do it, we need a global commitment to do that. Now, I think if we put our minds to it, we could develop that. For example, I'm told by friends who work in mobile telephony, that we could have all mobile phones being able to have a capacity in them to detect pathogens and novel pathogens. Or we could do it, also triangulate that through second order surveillance. So are people buying a lot more tissues or absent from work and having people going to see what's going on in those places? That is, I think, not beyond the capability of the global community to develop a capacity to be much better at identifying these at source and also eliminating some of the high-risk sources like wild meat trade, for example, which we see now happening in China.
But is all this coming at a time when actually international governance trends are going in the opposite direction?
Absolutely. So just to finish on what we can do. So we need that capability to pick it up at source, and we need the capability then to respond. So a rapid reaction force which can fly in and within 24 hours seal it off, identify it, and stop it spreading. That's the most we can, I think, hope for. As you say, this is happening. This need for a coordinated global response is happening at a time when many of the top players, not least the US, are withdrawing and becoming isolationist. And the WHO is not fit for purpose through no fault of its own. It's because we've starved it of resources, of the mandate, of the people to do its job. We haven't created a global health institution which is fit for this purpose. And although I get very despondent when I look at the weaknesses in the UN and other systems, the truth is that we can't blame the system. We have to blame ourselves, our governments, who are the shareholders, who are the owners of this system, and their unwillingness to commit what's necessary to their reform, to their resourcing, and they're staffing. When we get that, I think we'll be able to get a capability. But you're absolutely right. The signs are worrying because increasingly countries are pulling out and wanting to do it their way.
Mm. And give us a sense of, since you mentioned the WHO, where is it at compared to where it should be?
I think it's a very long way from where it should be. It has a small staff, the same people that were overworked on Ebola or now worked on this, very small staff. It's a federal structure, which means most of the money is distributed. That means the politics and power are also distributed, which is part of the reason you don't pick things up as early as you should, because governments, if they want to hide things, can through the system, which shouldn't be allowed in a global system. You know, I'd say in the ranking of UN institutions, probably mid-rank, but that's against very poor comparators. None of the UN institutions are fit for purpose, and they all need radical reform. So that is urgent task in hand.
Mm. And moving on to the broader picture, you'd written in your book, The Butterfly Defect, that these kinds of problems are inherent to globalization. Pandemics was one you highlighted, but what else were you thinking of, and what did you actually mean by the butterfly defect?
Well, the butterfly defect is an obvious play on Lorentz's butterfly effect. Lorentz, a physicist who observed through modeling that a butterfly flapping its wings over Brazil could cause a tornado over Texas. And this is the origins of chaos theory. It's an analysis of complexity and how complex systems interact in very unpredictable ways. And what we should expect as the global system becomes richer, more connected, more people with different connections in different domains. So trade, obviously, finance, internet, people movement, through more and more vectors of connectivity, airports, ports, internet, cyber, financial hubs, is that as these flows come through these centers from more and more sources, they are transmitted and changed in ways and then cascade over the boundary. So a pandemic causing a financial crisis, a cyber attack causing a collapse. And because the system is becoming more intertwined, we are becoming more interdependent. So what happens on the other side of the world increasingly shapes our lives, wherever we are in the world. And that is new. That's a very different stage of risk management. It's a very different stage of the dynamics of the global economy, something that existed even 30 or 40 years ago. And we see it in supply chains, we see it in the internet, we see it in finance. Pandemics, as I've said, are unusual because they can really originate anywhere. Most of these systemic risks, a relatively small group of players account for a very high part of the systemic risk. In finance, it's the big financial centers that really can create a global financial shock. And we know where they are, and they are totally interdependent. So when we had the financial crisis, 2007-2008, overnight, the shocks from New York were transmitted globally through contagion. And others are slower moving, like climate change, which is obviously a complex dynamic system affecting everywhere. But we don't understand many things about it still, including the tipping points. So these systems are all interacting, and they all basically lead one to the same conclusion, is that no country, no matter how powerful, including, of course, China and the US, can manage the lives of their citizens in the future independently. Because we're intertwined.
Yeah, although some people will draw the opposite conclusion and say, well, actually, this whole globalization thing was a mistake from the beginning. It's created a kind of monster and we need to retreat behind borders. And you already saw that with Donald Trump to a significant degree, emphasizing the nation state, banning the word global governance and so on. So if you met somebody making that argument, saying, you know, Mr. Golden, Professor Golden, we're not going to be able to manage all these risks. We've got to go back to something more manageable, more national. What would be your response?
I think it's a very rational response, and I totally empathize and understand why people might have that reaction. However, I think it's counterproductive because there's no wall high enough that's going to keep out climate change, a pandemic, or any of the other great risks that face us, antibiotic resistance, loss of jobs. These jobs are coming from tourists, they're coming from foreign investment, they're coming from export markets. We cannot, as independent countries, create the jobs and the wealth and the prosperity going forward if we're only caring about ourselves, let alone the 2 billion people in the world that still have to climb out of poverty. So it's impractical in the sense that it'll be counterproductive. Now, I'm not suggesting that we need totally open borders. where we let all flows. There's a lot of bads of globalization that need much better management, from illicit trade in all sorts of things to the dark, what happens on the dark web, to the anti-vax movement, meddling by foreign governments in our elections, and very dangerous people coming into our countries as well. So I'm not suggesting open borders. However, the reaction that somehow we can go it alone and be better off is, I think, highly counterproductive. And what I think our government should be focusing on is we want to do things at the lowest possible level of subsidiarity within our countries and between our countries. What critical mass of actors do we need to solve this threat for our own citizens' sake going forward, whether it's climate change, whether it's pandemics, whether it's the cyber attacks, antibiotic resistance, or any of the others? And when you answer that question, I think you'll come to the conclusion is that you desperately need to work with other governments, the big, certainly all the big players. In the case of pandemics, you need to care about the whole world. And you also need to work with other actors, companies, corporations, who in many cases will have the answers or big part of the answers and solutions, cities, states within big countries like California, like New York State, and other players. So I think we need a much more variable geometry where we design the coalition of actors that are going to help prevent or mitigate a global threat in light of what the threat is and what needs to be done.
Mm. And finally, I mean, well, this is to some extent guesswork, but how confident or otherwise are you that that in fact will be the reaction? Because you've also in your work looked back at history at these periods when there's been a kind of reaction against global integration, you know, centuries ago.
It's that reaction that keeps me awake at night. It's not that we're going to have global pandemics or financial crises or climate change. Yes, we are. But the question is, are we going to do something about it? We being individual countries, citizens, and others. And my concern is what the butterfly defect does lead to is a downward spiral that we need to get out of very consciously. As countries suffer from threats, they become more insular, growth declines, unemployment increases, inequality increases because it's all these small businesses and jobs that are being lost in this process. And then people get more angry, more populist, and we have more protectionism. And so I think it really behoves our leaders and others in our society, including those that can make the arguments, to argue that that's actually just going to make the situation worse. We have to break this downward spiral and work with others to create a more sustainable and equitable world. Unless we do that, we are all going to suffer. There's no country which can be an island and create a cocoon for its citizens where they will all be happy in the future. That is a fantasy. And deglobalization certainly isn't going to produce that because it's going to create a more vicious, conflictual world in which these threats escalate. So we need to, I think, have both the intellectual understanding but also the political will to work with others. I'm not suggesting everyone needs to cooperate. I'm suggesting that critical actors, given the challenge, need to cooperate. In the case of pandemics, that happens to be everyone.
That was Ian Golden, ending this week's edition. Please join us again next week, and if you don't already subscribe, remember you can do so in any podcast app. Just follow the link at ft.com/Rachman Review. Until next week, goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity,
YouTube creator Danny Vodari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.